Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable. Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake. A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe in myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Episode 55, my coming off a weekend of fights in LA, fights in Las Vegas, The Zone against ESPN.
Our last show?
What?
Our last one? I've decided that since boxing is second best to MMA, I'm switching it up.
Oh man, what a topic that's going to be.
It's going to be the fifth and final round since MMA only do five rounds.
The fifth and five rounds when it's a championship.
We're a championship team.
We're the championship team.
I think we're going to change it up.
We're a championship team, but a lot of news coming out of this past weekend, obviously, from Las Vegas and L.A., all over the boxing world. And like you said, even the MMA world is intertwining with the boxing world because of their card on the East Coast. So once again, guys, we'd like to thank you for listening, whether you're listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Audio Boom, or whatever. We appreciate you guys listening to episode 55 of The Last Round. Before we get into the review, obviously, of the ESPN card and the DAZN card, the Canelo Kovalev main event, and all that stuff this past Saturday, we do have a special guest on the line. And this past Saturday, we had another guest. We have two guests in the past couple days.
They're spoiled, Danny.
We're spoiled.
The business is spoiled.
We're spoiled. He's coming off a stoppage KO win on the Canelo Kovalev undercard. In Las Vegas at the MGM Grand Garden Arena. He's been getting a lot of attention. He's been getting a lot of attention. We've been watching a lot of interviews on him the last couple days. He's been all over Fight Week. And like I said, he got the W this past Saturday, and he's nice enough to join us this week for episode 55. Blair the Flair Cobbs is on the show. Thanks a lot for joining us, Blair.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much.
So, you know, just as we mentioned, you just fought this past Saturday, and you know, it seems, you know, obviously there was a little couple moments where, you know, it didn't seem like it was going your way, but you ended up pulling out the W. Can you talk to us about those moments and how you dug down and got the win?
Well, it's all about drama. I just came in there. I was prepared for a lot of things, but this guy is very awkward the way he came in. He has a cast iron chin. He's very resilient. So I knew he was going to be a very good dancing partner in the ring. We got in there, we got it out, we dug it out, and found the right remedy to stop this fighter. He clipped me on the back of the head at the end of the first round. So it was just a learning experience, knowing I should definitely not be getting hit in the back of the head, but how to avoid that situation is just another growing experience for Blair Cobbs. After that, we figured it out. We found out exactly how to address him over the rounds while still winning the rounds, and end up getting a stoppage.
And then afterwards, there was even more action with your celebration. Was it a Triple H style? It kind of looked like Triple H from WWE.
It's a little bit of a lot of things. It's Blair the Flair style. Blair the Flair is everything that people want to be. You know, he's a representation of everything that I and so many other people want to be when they step in that ring. And it was just a wonderful experience for Blair the Flair to be in there and share the excitement with the crowd and all the adoring fans all around the world.
So I we were told that you came in to some wrestling theme songs. Is that right?
Yeah, I came into the Triple H this time. I came in with the Triple H theme song. It was a wonderful experience. Triple H gave me a shout out. He really loved the content that I'm putting out as far as with boxing.
So have you always been a fan of pro wrestling, WWE, WCW, all that kind of stuff since you were a kid?
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I grew up in that era, where wrestling was kind of on the top, you know, on the top of entertainment in history. It was a wonderful experience being there to witness the Shawn Michaels, the Triple H, the Rock, the Stone Cold Steve Austin, all of these fighters in the WWE and also in WCW back in the old days with NWO and Macho Man. And it's just so many people. Hulk Hogan. It's a wonderful experience just being involved in, like, as a youngster, watching those people, and it kind of just crossed over in my boxing because of the entertainment value that it just brought to me. It brought so much excitement, and I just wanted to bring that excitement to what I do, which is boxing. And it just naturally happens when you see the lights, the cameras, the action. Blair the Flair just comes out and just excites the world.
And then we during our research for this interview, we read that Nazim Richardson gave you the nickname The Flair. Is that true?
Yeah, that's true. I've always been The Flair. It's just it was brother Nazim Richardson when I was in an amateur fight. He would come out to the fights and he would see me put on these really, really good performances. I was always like that star. And when it came out, he was like, "Oh man, that's the man. Like that's Blair the Flair. Yeah, yeah." and it just caught on like wildfire all across the tough city gyms of Philadelphia. That I was just that guy. I was that showman. I was that athlete, that supreme athlete. I was destined for greatness, is what most people thought of me. And I was considered Blair the Flair from then on.
Taking it back a bit now, I believe you were born and raised in Philadelphia.
No, I was raised in many other places, but I was born in Philadelphia. But I was raised in many places, and it's funny because my actual boxing origin comes from Mexico. I actually started boxing in Guadalajara, Mexico, and you know, with a turn of events in my life that had brought me there, and then from there. When I finally came back to America, most of my career was done. Most of my amateur career was done in Philadelphia, and then finally I made my way to Las Vegas.
So Blair, you mentioned interesting turn of events. You know, if you don't want to talk about it, it's okay. But it is an intriguing story that you have. In addition to the personality that you're showing in the sport, can you talk about, you know, maybe like a brief overview of how you came to Mexico, to Guadalajara, Mexico, to train? Because obviously there's a backstory to that.
Yeah, well, I guess, well, and to sum it up, I came from the same place, training with the same people that trained Canelo Alvarez when he first started. In Mexico. And how that all happened is because before everything, I was living a really good life, living a more well-off life in Beverly Hills and Hollywood, living a pretty good life in Beverly Hills and Hollywood. And my father ended up having some legal issues, and then next thing you know it, we were on the run in Mexico, and I lost everything. I lost my mom by that time, my grandmother by that time, so I didn't have anybody else to look after me but my father. And my father was a Rolling Stone at that time, so we had to flee the country, me and my sister. And at that time, when I lost everything and lost my identity and lost who I am as a person, I found boxing. And in that time, I found boxing, and boxing, I just never left the gym. After 2 weeks of training in the gym, I had my first fight, and I never stopped fighting from then on. And then from that period, I finally had an opportunity to leave Mexico, and that was a wonderful experience because, you know, at that particular time, you're on a run and many things can happen. You can get stuck out there and you can die. You can die out there and nobody would know that you even, like, that you even existed almost. And I finally got out of that situation and made my way to Philadelphia. And for that, it was a pretty large chunk of time I was stuck in Philly and couldn't get anything done in Philly as far as as far as professional boxing is concerned. So then I luckily got an opportunity to leave Philadelphia to Las Vegas, and the city life has been wonderful to me.
So you mentioned that you linked up with the team of Canelo Alvarez when you moved to Mexico. So were you around a young Canelo? Because you and Canelo are about the same age, right? Were you around him when he was young?
We were kind of like in shadows of one another. Like, I wasn't around him, but the person, like, let's put it like this. Oscar Latios is one of the first Golden Boy fighters to ever be a world champion.
Right.
Oscar Latios' father is the one that trained me, was my first trainer in Mexico. Oscar Latios was in Guadalajara. Oscar Latios is Canelo Alvarez mentor when he first came, you know, first begun becoming a professional fighter at a young age. And in many cases, we were in shadows of one another. There was a time where we actually fought on the same card, and I was the main attraction at that particular venue. Because of the hair and because of the flamboyancy, because I was so much different. I was the main event of that attraction, even though it was just a smoker. It was just a little club show smoker amateur tournament, you know, amateur fights. And he was like on the undercard of that particular occasion. It's just been a wonderful experience going through many ups and downs, and it's wonderful to see Canelo growing as an athlete to where he is in this stage. But yes, I was there in the very beginning.
So what took you to Vegas? Because I believe you now train with Brandon Woods and ex-WBA super bantamweight champion Bones Adams.
Absolutely, absolutely. They are an incredible team. They're growing me as an athlete, as an individual, and as a boxer. We're learning, we're growing, we're becoming better and better each time. I'm better than I was when I first walked in this year to all the way until now. Each fight we're progressing and making better each time. Just every time we go, we're making progress. As long as we're moving forward, we're moving in the right direction. And I feel like the team with Bones and Brandon Woods is wonderful.
Did you always know that you were going to exhibit some form of personality? Because obviously, you know, as we look through time, like, you know, a lot of the successful fighters, you know, you have to have obviously the talent to back it up. But I mean, if you look at it, for example, the most recent example, like a Mayweather, especially after he fought De La Hoya, he went into WWE. He was at WrestleMania, I believe, in 2008. And then he came back, and then, you know, on the HBO 24/7s and everything, he really let out his personality, which obviously helped his brand and the business side of things. Like, you know, is that how kind of you look at the sport in that regard?
I don't know. Like, I guess I started to see that after the fact that, like, the real me comes out, a part of me anyways, that come out every time those lights and those cameras are on me, and I just show out. You know, it's a part of me that just comes out. You know, and it's an alter ego. It's a completely different person than even the person that you're talking to right now. You're talking to Blair Cobbs, but Blair the Flair is a completely different entity, and he's a hell of a sportsman and a hell of a entertainer. And when it comes to that regard, and it just happens naturally. It just happened. And it just so happens that it works good for boxing. You know, it just so happened. Like, you know, it wasn't something, like, I had no clue that I would get that kind of praise or even get that kind of results as far as like how people would react from it. It's just who I am as a person. And when those lights come on, it just happens. It just happens naturally.
When are we going to see Blair the Flair, the movie, the story of your life?
Oh, I'm pretty sure that should be in the works very soon. But the story is not over yet. So Blair, there's a lot more to see from Blair the Flair.
Is it going to be Wiz Khalifa, Jaden Smith? Who's going to play you?
Well, we're having talks. It could be with Jaden Smith. By the time that movie does come to life, Jaden Smith will be even better as far as the actor is concerned. Even though he's already a wonderful actor, but also his body would mature to a level where I'm pretty sure he could look like a professional athlete.
What do you think about Tyson Fury? You know, obviously he was just in WWE doing one of their events, and he says he enjoys it, especially because, you know, Tyson Fury obviously has a big personality and likes to exhibit that side of his style. What'd you think about his interactions over there?
I love the mix up. I love when people are not afraid to push the boundaries and make mistakes and not afraid to try new things. So in my book, he's A-okay with me. I didn't get to see everything, but it was a wonderful experience just understanding and knowing that he's branching out and doing something new.
Who are some of the fighters right now that you know you kind of admire, that, even if it's past, present? Who are some of the fighters that you admire?
Well, as Blair Cobbs, I have to say, as Blair Cobbs, I admire plenty of people. I admire Muhammad Ali and his ability to transcend the sport of boxing. That's one of my biggest inspirations. Sugar Ray Leonard, his skills was incredible. It's just so many to name. Aaron Plyer, it's just so many. So Salvador Sanchez, it's a lot of people. But for Blair the Flair only admires Blair the Flair. Blair the Flair's favorite fighter is Blair the Flair.
So you're limousine riding, jet flying, kiss stealing?
Wheeling, dealing, son of a gun.
Woo! I think you said you got Triple H's attention. I don't know if you've got Ric Flair's attention, but you know, if this keeps going in the direction that hopefully you want it to go, I'm pretty sure eventually they're going to start coming to you. You know, is that something that you're looking forward to?
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I would love to meet and get in the midst of some of these tremendous entertainers in the entertainment world. They're true inspiration to not just boxers, not just me, but all people in the entertainment world and just the world in general. And it's a wonderful opportunity to just display my skills and my craft in that same fashion.
What are your goals for 2020?
Well, my goal right now is to capture a world title at the same time while captivating millions of people all around the world and inspiring millions of people around the world. That's my short term goal. Yeah. And my long term goal is to transcend the sport of boxing and become a major iconic figure that can do major things for people all around the world.
Has there ever been a boxing world champion and a WWE champion at the same time?
Could Blair be the first? Possibly could see one in Blair the Flair.
What do you I know we're diving into wrestling, but I think this is interesting.
Yeah.
I think this is interesting. What do you think about, because you mentioned that you were a fan in the 90s, you know, WCW, WWE, obviously there's a new player in town with AEW. What do you think about them?
I like it, you know. It's a little unorthodox because I'm not used to seeing that particular type of setup. But, hey man, I love seeing a mix up and new people, new faces, and a new broadcasting channel. I love it. I love it. I love seeing things happen, seeing things getting spiced up.
When are you planning to come back into the ring? Obviously, it's probably going to be 2020, right? Do you have any idea?
Who knows? Who knows at this point? I should be done for this year. Hopefully, we'll see. because who knows, at a late notice, I might mess around and shock the world again with another excellent performance. But we're looking forward to fighting in 2020 and hopefully capturing a world title sometime very, very soon, if not 2020.
And you mentioned you are assigned to Golden Boy Promotions, right?
Absolutely. I am I'm one of the major figures in Golden Boy Promotions, and I look forward to being an outstanding Golden Boy fighter for a very long time.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, Blair, you know, we appreciate your time. We know you're coming off a big event this past Saturday, arguably the biggest event of the year in the Canelo card. At the MGM Grand in Las Vegas. So, you know, we appreciate you coming on and giving us a couple minutes of your time here at the Last Round. And before we let you go ahead and plug your social media, plug anything you have upcoming, anything you got that you want to let the fans know about. Go ahead and plug it, man.
Okay. It is Blair the Flair Cobbs. You can check me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Blair the Flair. For more exciting content, you can check me out at BlairTheFlair.com. Woo! Nobody does it better, baby.
I think that's the best one we've ever had.
That's definitely the best exit we've had.
That's the best exit we've ever had. All right, Blair, well, you know,
good. Nobody does it better.
Styling and profiling, right? Styling and profiling. All right, Blair, well, we appreciate you coming on, as we said, and you know, we wish you the best of luck in your career, and we hope to have you on again on the show again in the future.
Thank you very much. Have a wonderful evening.
You too. Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Man, I really hope that he turns out to be what he wants to be.
I'm all pumped now.
I really do.
I'm raring to go.
I really do, because, you know, I know there's people out there who, like, hate on people, like, oh, you know, like, you know, attitude and stuff, and, you know, people hate it on Mayweather or, like, Broner and stuff like that. I mean, like, in terms of talent, obviously they're not comparable. You know, Mayweather can at least back it up, you know, most of his career, or all of his career, essentially. But, I mean, like, this is what brings more fans into the sport. This is what makes the sport bigger, is people who have personalities and obviously can back it up in the ring. You know, I mean, look at like Tyson, like we mentioned Tyson Fury earlier. You know, going to WWE, he's reportedly making, I don't even know how much money over there. But they got him because of his personality, essentially. And because he's a good fighter, obviously, because you have to kind of keep both at a parallel level. I'm telling you, man, he's got me excited. I really hope he turns out what he wants to be, because I'm telling you, the more entertainment we have, and if you, like I said, if you can back it up with your talent, it just gives way more attention to the sport and more eyeballs. It just makes the sports makes the sport better.
No, I totally agree. I hope they kind of, you know, wrap him up in cotton wool a little bit. You know, I think they might, just so they can use, you know, his charisma that he has. You know, yeah. he puts a smile on your face. You know, he got on the phone, started wooing and stuff like that. I felt all pumped. You know, he's a crowd pleasing right. type of guy. So I hope they.
I think we should edit in a you know, Ric Flair theme song in the post the post edit.
I think, you know, they should just keep him a little bit instead of, you know, just throwing him out there and putting him in with some guys who are going to challenge him too much, because, you know, he is a little bit raw. I don't know whether it's just he gets carried away and plays up to the crowd, because, you know, essentially he was fighting Carlos Ortiz Cervantes, who was 11-5, kind of more of a journeyman,
right?
And got dropped in the first round but he even said, you know, like, he went in there, he wanted to finish him. You know, the guy had, you know, a fairly good chin, but if he's going to be a big superstar and a world champion like he wants to be, then those are the sort of guys he should really be putting away with ease. So
no, you're right. You're right. You're right. You know, obviously, you know, by looking at it, he has some stuff to work on. But the good thing is that obviously he came on the show and he acknowledged it. He's like, yeah, you know, I made a mistake, but I was able to, you know, overcome it and stop the guy. He ended up stopping the guy. You know, he stopped the guy, and he, at the end of the day, he got the win.
You mean he's got everything else? He speaks well. He looks good. He's charismatic. He gets the crowd going. He's going to put bums on seats.
Yeah. Limousine riding, jet flying, kiss stealing, wheeling dealing.
But does he have the performances? But because he does the rest, I think Golden Boy and other promotions are always going to want to have him, because some people have the performances, but they don't put bums in seats.
No, you're right.
So, you know, it's always good to have someone on the undercard like him that's going to, you know, people are going to want to see.
You're right. But like I said, if he can, like I said, go the route that he wants to, where he becomes an extremely good fighter, he keeps winning, you know, he becomes one of the best, and have that personality, man, like that's money.
Yeah,
that's money. What I don't care what people say, like, oh, you know, it's, you know, people are arrogant or something like that. That's what people are into. Mm-hmm. Look at Conor McGregor. Look at Mayweather. Like, you know, it in the sport of boxing, I mean, people know, like, Canelo doesn't really have a big personality, but because he's from Mexico, and Mexico always has had a history of producing great fighters, Chavez, Marquez, Barrera, all these guys really didn't have outlandish personalities, not even close. But because they could fight and they produced exciting fights, and because obviously Mexicans, Mexican-Americans, Latin Americans and stuff like that are big fight fans, they get behind those fighters. So that helps them. They already had that foundation. But for other guys, you know, like a Mayweather or something like that, who had that personality, made them bigger, you know. So that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, the route he's going, I hope it turns out the way he wants it to, because it's just going to make the sport even bigger. Which, why wouldn't we want that?
I would go and see him.
Yeah, why not? You know, I'm excited, man. You know, and especially that he's coming out to WWE theme songs. That's great.
I want to get him back on.
That's great.
I'm pumped, man. Just after that interview.
That's great, man. And then, you know, I forgot to ask him about it, but, you know, The Rock was obviously at the UFC event. But The Rock's been at boxing events. Triple H has been at boxing events. You know, wrestlers, they're fight fans. So, you know, I think it's cool, man. I think it's cool when people integrate. You know, there's people out there who, like, are haters of, like, that type of stuff. But, at the end of the day, as Adrian Broner likes to say, that's where the money's at, is in the entertainment. You know, it's like good looks, entertainment, marketable stuff like that. You know, that's the recipe. You know, it is what it is. It's business. You know, so I hope it works out, man. You know, he's obviously got the personality and he's undefeated. You know, if he can kind of tweak a little bit some things in his technique and obviously his boxing ability, I think he's got it, man. Hopefully.
No, definitely. If he can tweak his performances and get the results he wants, then he literally has the whole package.
Yeah, I'm excited. But we'll get him on again in the future, and you know, hopefully he's even bigger than he is now. So, but moving on, like I said, to the DAZN card this past Saturday in Las Vegas, Nevada, at the MGM Grand Garden of Arena, who also showed the UFC fight. Let's start with the female fight. Sanisa Estrada defeats Marlene Esparza by TKO stoppage in the 10th? Or was it the 11th?
After the 9th.
Was it after the 9th?
After the 9th, the end of the 9th.
The end of the 9th, so right before the 10th. Because of the
accidental headbutt.
Accidental headbutt. That gash on Marlene Esparza was horrible. They were saying that you can actually see, like, her skull or something. Was that true?
It was huge.
And if the crazy thing is, if you look at Sanisa's face, she didn't really look like she got hit.
No, it was a good fight for a women's fight. You know, we've seen a few.
Well, you know what did help is because they went 3-minute rounds. It gave them more time, more action.
No, you said that came out beforehand, right?
Yeah, it did.
So I find it weird that they can sit. So they're in Vegas fighting for an interim WBA flyweight title, 10 3-minute rounds. Katie Taylor is in Britain fighting for I think it was a WBO title.
Of course you bring up Katie Taylor.
But 10 2-minute rounds.
Well, yeah.
But it's the same spot.
But it depends on the commission. The commission has to approve it.
It should be at least the similar rules. You know?
I think we've touched on this before, but there's like issues like the WBC and some other organizations like don't want to go the 3-minute route because they say they've had medical research that say that, you know, from a biological standpoint, you know, females, you know, their bodies aren't equipped to go that route, you know, with taking punches like that.
Doing the UFC.
Well, I mean,
you get kicked in the head.
Well, I mean, you're right. You're right. I mean, you know, that's just, you know, what I've read and stuff like that. I've never seen the medical research, but I mean, like, why would you quote something like that if it's not really there? You know?
Why would you say the world's flat?
You're right. You're right. What is this, a Joe Rogan podcast now? God. The world of Joe Rogan now?
Kind of going off topic there, but.
But, I mean, yeah, I think they're going that route.
They need to for the finishes.
They're going that route, but, I mean, obviously, if they have been two-minute rounds, I mean, I don't doubt that there is medical research out there. I mean, I'm sure there is because, you know, the two-minute rounds are still universally adopted. So, I mean, who knows? Yeah, we'll see how that goes. But, you know, that's another conversation for another day. But Sunisa, you know, obviously gets the win. This was an anticipated fight. Like, even when both of these fighters got signed by Golden Boy a couple years ago, like 2016 or something, I think they got signed around the same time or close to. I think Marlon got signed first.
Marlon was first, and then Sunisa got signed not long afterwards.
Yeah.
And then Marlon used to always quote, you know, Golden Boy's first ever female to try and wind them up, and then they used to go back and forth the whole time on Instagram.
No, you're right, but I mean, I think we've talked about this before, but Golden Boy obviously had a plan when they signed both of them, and obviously it worked because they were able to keep developing them up until the point where they can put them against each other, which worked out. I mean, they fought on a Canelo card in Las Vegas on DAZN. And it was an exciting fight. It was an exciting fight that I think up until the stoppage, it was a technical stoppage, and it went to the cards because of the headbutt. I think it was an exciting fight. I think they were producing very good fireworks, because we were at the Top Rank on ESPN card in Carson, California, for the Burchell Jason Sosa 130-pound WBC title bout. And we were talking about that fight, and remember I kept telling you, I was like, I think somebody might get knocked out or somebody might go down, because they were hitting each other hard.
They just went straight from the bell.
From the first round.
I like Sanisha's style. You know, she's got a very good, kind of keeps a low arm, you know, models herself on Roy Jones Jr. a little bit. So
that's her favorite fighter.
I think she's definitely one to watch, and, you know, I was glad that she got the win, and it's just... I was telling you before the show, it's just intriguing that she's got the interim WBA flyweight title.
Right.
And the holder of the WBA full title is Nicola Adams, which happens to be Marlon Esparza's ex-girlfriend.
Yeah. So, Marlon Esparza, I think, is married to a guy now. She has a kid.
Yeah, she only had a child like 3 or 4 months ago.
Yeah, she's very recent, which is pretty crazy. It's pretty crazy. But before, she did have a girlfriend. Is it Nicola Adams?
Nicola Adams. Yeah.
You know,
they met in the amateurs, I believe.
It was very public. You know, they were out and about and stuff like that. So, and you had told me this right before we went on air, and then I was like, "Holy crap!" I was like, "Imagine, you know, Sunisa fighting her. Like, you know, what a world that is." You know, it's just, but it's an intriguing story. I mean, if they're using, if Top Rank was using. The Joette Gonzalez and Shakur Stevenson family drama behind it, you know, to push the fight. You know, I think if this ever happens, if Golden Boy ever makes that fight, I mean, obviously they're going to push that narrative, you know, just it makes him a little bit more intriguing.
It does make it intriguing. And it's a fight I believe Sunisha would win as well. This isn't her natural weight. She actually stepped up to this weight to fight Marlon. So
I think Marlon still did well, though. They were going back and forth. Like they were both each getting their shots in.
Mm-hmm.
They're definitely going to run it back. Golden Boy's going to have them fight again sometime next year. You know, obviously they have to wait for Esparza's head to heal and, you know, get clear and all that stuff. But it was a competitive enough fight where they're going to run it back.
I believe so. And then obviously Estrada afterwards said the beef is not settled. I still don't like her. So, you know, I think kind of leaves the door open for a second, maybe even a third, depending on what the outcome of the second.
Yeah, I think it was exciting. And I mean, good for them too, especially being on a platform like that, on a Canelo card in Vegas. You know, good for them. I'm happy for them, you know, regardless of you know, one loser and one winner, you know. It's good for the female boxing. That was great. And also moving on to the co-main event. Your favorite of mine. That's right. The Flash. King Ryan Garcia stops Romero Duno in the first round.
The big sigh.
All right.
Where do we start?
Where do we start? You know what? I don't even want to dive too much into this. Oh man. I don't even know what to say anymore.
The Phantom Punch?
Look, I know
I don't know why people haven't said it on Twitter.
I know the whole people saying like, you know, Duno took a dive or it was fixed and stuff like that. Like
it was a temple shot. There,
okay. In the history of boxing, you cannot say that stuff hasn't been fixed. Just talk to Don King, you know? In the history of boxing, there's obviously stuff they probably and you know what happens on you know like smaller cards in other countries that aren't televised, you know, like oh pay somebody or whatever. I mean, it happens. You can't deny that. You can't deny that. But nobody's like, especially in this modern era, nobody's ever going to come out and say like, oh yeah, I paid this guy to do it, or I did this, or we paid this guy to take a dive or something like that. Like, no, because it's gonna make you look bad and corrupt and give a black eye to the sport, you know. So of course that's bad PR. But
it just looked so.
It looked extremely sketchy. It looked very. It's very unusual. Like, I don't know. I've watched it, and I know people say like, no, Duno, like his arm went limp or whatever, and he just fell. He just got hit. Like, but I've watched the slow motion. I just don't understand how. I really don't.
Because describe really don't. He hits him with what like a right.
But it was
a straight right.
It wasn't even that hard.
And then he comes in with this.
Duno took it.
Yeah, because he hits him with a right, and then he comes in with a huge left hook. But before that even gets chances to land, Duno's already on his way down to the canvas.
Yeah, it was like a delayed. Well, that's why people are saying like, oh, you know, it was like a delayed, you know, shot. Like he got hit, and then maybe something happened, and then he fell. Which I mean, obviously it's possible, but I don't know. I mean, like. I don't know. I don't know what to say about this fight. I really don't. But I do want to add that, you know, obviously, you know, it was a step up in a sense on paper.
Mm-hmm.
It was a step up, but this does not prove that Ryan has improved at all for anything.
It, you know, before the fight in the preview,
you know, Duno's not a world ranked contender. Regardless, he was an up and coming prospect just like Ryan.
We both thought that Duno would do better than he did.
No, obviously.
You know?
Yeah, obviously.
I've got to say that.
No, obviously everybody thought that. But this isn't like Garcia beat like a, you know, like a Tank Davis or you know, or any of those guys, that, you know, or even like, I don't know, who else is at 135? Like a Luke Campbell or
Linares.
You know, Linares or stuff like that, you know, which they're now talking about Garcia fighting Linares, which honestly, like, if they're really going to put him in with Linares...
Linares will school him.
Well, that's what we think, but I mean, like... I don't know.
Linares has enough left in the tank.
No, I think Linares should be absolutely the favorite. Like, 100%. But, I mean, like... Because, I don't know. But if this is... Because obviously Ryan is a star. Ryan was a star in this fight. He has the marketability, you know. He's sponsored by like some cologne or something like that, and some other stuff. Obviously, he has a big social media following. He's been on Logan Paul's, you know, podcast and show, which KSI and Logan Paul fight the Zone card this upcoming Saturday. So obviously, the moneymaker. I mean, did you see how happy Oscar De La Hoya was after that fight? You could see it in his face. He was like from ear to ear. He was laughing, and he grabbed Ryan like, "Oh my God! Like you won! Like." You know, obviously, yeah, he's your moneymaker. Understand, business-wise, hell yeah, I get it.
Well, Golden Boy need it.
Yeah, hell yeah, I get it. From a business perspective.
Canelo and Ryan Garcia, the face of Golden Boy.
But I mean, I don't know. I just, I don't want to go the conspiracy theory route here, but.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, they paid Duno to take a dive, but just the way he went down, like.
It looked weird.
He kind of blocked the first jab, and then the straight right came.
Remember when
then the left hook, and he was already on his way down, and I just can't see what shot made him go down.
You remember when De La Hoya fought Hopkins?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember how he went down?
Mm-hmm.
You remember how people were saying, like, oh, you know, and then like, you know, he got hit with like a body shot and then he goes down and then he gets up. He's like, oh yeah, he just caught me in this right spot. And then what happens like after, like they become partners for Golden Boy?
Yeah, true, true.
You know, like, I don't know. I you know, I don't want to go too far down that rabbit hole, but I'll just say that, you know, the win didn't impress me. Not at all. You know, not at all. And I was really hoping it was going to keep going and
it would have been nice just to see how much he's changed under Reynoso.
Well, that's what I wanted to see. It was over so quickly. Yeah, and like, I mean, I know people are going to be like, oh, well, that's not his fault. He stopped him, you know. And you know, well, in a sense, yeah, but like, you know, like he didn't really – in that whole whatever minute, 30, 45 seconds or whatever, like he didn't really show anything that he was working on. He looked the same.
Wild, yeah.
Yeah, he looked the same. So – you know, this was what, the second fight under the Reynosos?
I believe so. Yeah.
So, and, you know, we still can't tell whether he's improved or not. So, I don't know. But at the end of the day, he didn't. It's not like he beat a world ranked contender in Duno. Duno was just like, was at near like the same level, a good up and coming prospect, you know? So, on paper, it was a good matchup. Yeah. But this isn't like Garcia beat, like, oh, yeah, you know, this guy, like. People were only calling for him to fight Duno since a couple months ago. It hasn't been like they've been calling it like for like a year or two. Like, oh, you need to fight Duno. No, it's only been a couple months. But he's making it seem like, oh, yeah, the guy that everybody's been saying I couldn't beat. Yeah, they've only been saying for like a couple months because your guy, Avery Sparrow, who you were supposed to fight, fell through. So Duno was like, yeah, I'll fight. And, you know, it only became, some type of, you know, attention-grabbing scene because Duno's name was thrown in there and he was already on the card, and then there was money wise that there was a fight, you know, some tension between Golden Boy and the Garcia camp, and you know, and then we heard what did we hear?
That they agreed and then they came back because the mum said
not that. We heard about something from a source this past weekend that Garcia and his like family were in a fight. Like argument or something, mm-hmm. And somebody was saying like, "Oh, I'm gonna sue you" or something like that. Like, remember we were told that?
Yeah, Roger, the manager.
Yeah, we were told like, you know, yeah. that this happened this past weekend in Vegas, you know, saying that like, you know, some lawsuit that against the Garcias or something like that. I don't know.
Guadalupe, the
Valencia
lawyer,
yeah, like
was getting involved, and
yeah,
the manager Roger didn't want him involved.
And, so I mean, there's supposedly reportedly, you know, and that was, you know, the source we got, it was a pretty good source. You know, there's still a lot of issues in between that whole clan right there. There's a lot of issues. There is.
There has been since day one, and it just seems like it's just issues the whole time. Feuds in the family, with the management team, then with Golden Boy. It's, you know, he's doing the right thing so far. What's that, 19? He's 19-0 with 16 KOs. I just say be careful what you wish for, calling out, you know, Gervonta Davis, Lomachenko, Linares, you know, he's going from...
I think obviously Golden Boy's smart enough to know that, like, he's not ready for any of those names, not even close, but they're making money off of him, so they're developing him, which is the right thing to do. I understand. On paper, Duno was a good step up. So, you know, I mean, we'll see. We'll see how it goes, but, like, I'm really intrigued to see who he fights next.
Yeah.
You know, if they're really planning on Linares... If they, you know, I don't think Linares should be next. I don't even think he's like. I think he needs at least three more solid opponents to test him. Like, you know, obviously going up in level in each three before he can get like a Linares. Because, you know, Linares might not be what he was anymore, but he's still, like you said, he still has a gas tank. He could still do it.
He just his boxing IQ.
Yeah, Linares is one of the best boxers to. You know, to be able to watch.
I think, you know, with Ryan, he's got speed and power, and that's it.
Right.
You know, I think if you were good enough to try to nullify those two things, you know, keep him moving, don't let him get set, then I think he would be totally baffled by it. I don't think he'd know what to do. So.
Yeah, but, you know, moving on, Canelo Alvarez stops Sergey Kovalev at 175 pounds at Canelo's debut at 175 pounds and becomes the WBO light heavyweight world champion. He stops him in the 11th round from a left hook to the temple area, which obviously knocked Kovalev's equilibrium out of whack. And then Kovalev comes with a straight right to the chin and just knocks him down, almost puts him through the ropes. I know people had it close throughout the fight, which I understand. you know. But you got to look at it from this perspective. They landed punches, connected punches were about the same, but Kovalev threw more than double to land those same punches than Canelo did, you know. Kovalev's jab was working pretty well. It was. I give him that. And Canelo, you know, did look a little slower, but you can see, like, you can even just look in his face when he was, like, swinging, he was putting power behind it, you know. He had the bigger power behind his punches. And I think it was a safe bet, because I think what were the scores at the end of the fight? I think it was 95-95 and then, like, 96-94 for...
96-94 twice to Canelo, 95-95.
Yeah, so it was a close fight. It was a close fight on the scorecards up in there, which, you know, I can understand. You know, I think what happened, and I think, you know, people saying, like, oh, you know, Kovalev, they're saying Kovalev took a dive too. That wasn't a dive. That was not a dive. That was
boxing
not,
Twitter.
That was not a dive. But, you know, social media, everybody has an opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But people are angry that Kovalev didn't use his power. He didn't exert his size and, you know, the crusher attitude that he had, which, you know, I can understand that point. But I think honestly, it was a smart game plan that he went in there trying to box him and use his jab, because it kept him in the fight. You know, I think Buddy McGirt, his game plan was actually pretty good up until he got stopped. I think their game plan was working well. And him throwing more punches, throwing more than double what Canelo was throwing, obviously helped him, because on the scorecards, you know, he was keeping it close. You know, and obviously if it went to the scorecards, Canelo probably would have got the decision. But, you know, it kept Kovalev in the fight. And, I mean, what do you think?
No, I agree. I think that some people aren't giving Kovalev maybe enough credit, because, you know, like you said, he was throwing that many jabs that he couldn't throw like a heavy jab, you know, to back Canelo up, because he would have got so tired. You know,
he was afraid of Canelo's power. You could tell.
Exactly. Like, I mean,
because he's a counterpuncher too.
Exactly. So that was why he was just throwing jabs after jab after jab. But so Canelo,
it worked for him though.
Yeah. So Canelo couldn't close the distance and get inside, because once the fight got inside, they were in Canelo's territory. Yeah. That's what Canelo wanted.
And he was slowly getting inside as the rounds got later too.
Yeah, because so Kovalev admitted in an interview afterwards that after the sixth round, he could feel himself, you know, getting tired, because obviously he's older. It was only 8-10 weeks ago he had his last fight against Anthony Yard,
right,
which went to the 11th or 10th as well.
Right.
So I thought the game plan worked well. I thought Kovalev was doing well. I actually had him winning going into that round. But maybe I just gave him too much credit for the amount of jabs. And luckily, because everyone was so different about the scorecards, luckily it didn't have to go to the scorecards. Because,
no, right. You know, I think people would have complained regardless of who won.
Exactly. So
I think, you know, Canelo, he's lucky that he was able to find that opening with that combo and stop him.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
He eliminated that. So, you know, and obviously, like, I think if you were watching the DAZN broadcast, like, one of the commentators had said, like, you know, hey, I'm still waiting for Canelo to hit into fifth gear. I don't even think he's in fourth gear yet. And right as he said that, Canelo stops him. And he's like, oh, there's your fifth gear. So, you know, regardless of what people say, he was already my top pound for pound number one. This just solidifies it.
Yeah, everyone's going to say that he picked
Canelo, Lomachenko, top two right there.
Everyone's going to say that, you know, he picked an easy target, but
no, but Kovalev was still dangerous. And regardless, Canelo's 5'9", and Kovalev's like 6'1" or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know he's not what he was like 5 years ago as the crusher, but he's a world champion at 175 pounds, and he was still dangerous. He was still extremely dangerous. And Canelo started at fighting at 154. And has fought at 154, 160, 168, and now 175.
I think his debut was at 140 when he was at 15.
Well, yeah, probably. I don't know, maybe. But, I mean, like, essentially 154, 160, 168, 175. 160, 154 around there. Canelo's not a light heavyweight. He's not. You know, people are talking about him staying at light heavyweight and fighting guys like Beterbiev, Dmitry Bivol, and stuff like that. No, he's not going to fight those guys. He's not going to fight those guys because the risk is too high and the reward's not high enough. So
what do you think? I put the tweet out today. He's got 8 fights left on the $365 million deal with DAZN. And me and you were kind of touching on it. Who do you think that he's got left that is actually credible and challenging enough? You know, obviously...
And a moneymaker?
Exactly, because obviously not all 8 of those fights are going to be, you know, big, star-studded, fill-the-stadium type fights, but probably half of them need to be. Because look at him, you know, he had like a big fight, then he had Rocky Fielding, kind of like an easy gimme, back into Jacobs, then into this one. So, you know, you could give him a little gimme here and there just because of what big name fighter.
I mean, he's fought Triple G twice. He went up to 160, he got a belt there, beat Rocky Fielding. Yeah, Rocky Fielding is not a Triple G or Jacobs.
He was happy to be there, wasn't he?
But, just the fact that he went up in weight, you know, got another belt, essentially, even though it's a secondary belt. And then he goes up to 175 and fights one of the most dangerous guys in that division of the last, like, 7-8 years. Like, even though he's older, he's still dangerous. He was a world champion. It wasn't like he wasn't a world champion.
3-time.
So, yeah. You know, like, it wasn't like he wasn't a world champion. He was still dangerous. Like, it was still a dangerous fight. That's why as the day got closer, people were talking about, like, the betting odds. Like, hey, you know, Kovalev might be the underdog. But, like, that's one of those bets that's just like, you know what? Like, it wouldn't hurt to put some money on Kovalev because it's, you know, he's obviously got a chance regardless. And he's a big underdog. So, you know, if there's a good chance that he could still win, and you can win big in your money.
There's only 2 people in the race.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I don't know. I think, you know, as I mentioned, I think Canelo, you know, is pound for pound number one. You know, Triple G twice, Danny Jacobs, Rocky Fielding, Kovalev. I mean, look at that resume, you know? Like, the only person who probably has any type of argument to, you know, even if you want to think about it like that, at least how I look at it, is Lomachenko for that number one spot. Because him and Lomachenko are going up in weight. Lomachenko has already said, I can't go higher than 135. He's hit its ceiling. Canelo's pretty much, nobody expected him to go 175. But he's pretty much said, like, yeah, he can't, you know, next is cruiserweight. You know, he's not going to go to that unless he fights, like, somebody who's, like, 200-300th ranked. But, you know, it's Canelo and Lomachenko for me. Canelo's number one. Lomachenko's number two.
Next up, Callum Smith, Anfield, England.
No. Who did I tell you before we went on air?
That's who you said you wanted, right? You said Callum Smith.
I didn't say I wanted that, but I said people are going to be mad, but who's Golden Boy going to try to, like, you know, try to marinate and try to really try to push the narrative now that it's out there? Jorge Masvidal.
That's right. No, sorry, you did say that, yeah.
Jorge Masvidal. I'm telling you, these cross-promotion fights, McGregor, look, I mean, the business is there. De La Hoya's, you know, been saying, like, when McGregor was, you know, when people would ask Canelo or De La Hoya about, like, hey, you know, what about Canelo versus McGregor? Oh, yeah, it'd be a great fight. Yeah, McGregor, if McGregor wants to come over here, tell him to call me, you know, have UFC call me. And Canelo would gladly fight him. And Canelo has even said, yeah, I'll fight him and stuff like that. Well, hell yeah, you're going to fight him because it's going to be money. Him and Mayweather made a ton of freaking money, and they were super. It was a superstar event, you know. And now that Jorge Masvidal, who just beat Nate Diaz, you know, it was a controversial stoppage and stuff. But Masvidal's stock in the UFC has really risen the last couple months because of, you know, his performance, his personality. Now the Nate Diaz fight, and then they ask him about the Canelo fight because, you know, the whole issue that DAZN announced they were going to wait for the UFC main event to stop. To finish before they put on the Canelo fight, which was obviously a controversial decision because the crowd in the MGM Grand Garden Arena had to wait like an hour and a half just sitting there, to the point where MGM Garden executives reportedly had to call Dana White. Not reportedly, Dana White admitted it. MGM Grand Garden Arena executives had to call Dana White, UFC, and ask him if they can show the UFC main event to the MGM crowd. And they let him. You know, I think that's, you know, and DAZN's reportedly said that, you know, it worked out because their subscriptions skyrocketed, or they significantly went up after the main event of the UFC, which, you know, it's possible. I mean, you know, we never know their numbers. We never really know definitive numbers. So it's possible it could have worked out, you know, but we're supposed to take their word for it. But, going back to my original point, Masvidal was obviously asked in subsequent interviews, including today, you know, if he would fight Canelo, and he's like, yeah, I'll whoop his ass. You don't think De La Hoya and Golden Boy is going to be like, hey, you know, we should, because, I mean, they're similar weights. They fight around the same weight classes. You don't think they're going to look at that and be like, hey, you know, we should look that way. Because Canelo wants, you know, he's a prize fighter. He's a prize fighter now, you know. Who else can he make money with like that? And that, you know, I'm telling you, don't be surprised if that narrative is pushed a little more and it ends up happening later on.
I could see them talking about it, you know, like Floyd used to, kind of testing the water, seeing what he gets back from the audience,
Like, it took like a year and a half for like 2 years, a year and a half for McGregor Mayweather to happen, so I get watched. Don't be surprised. I'm seriously, don't be surprised. And then quickly touching on World Boxing Super Series final. This is going to be a great fight. Nonito Donaire goes up against Inoue for the WBA and IBF Bantamweight World title. This Thursday in Japan?
Japan, yep.
In Japan. Really quick, who do you got? And I like Donaire. Donaire's always been one of my favorite fighters.
As much as I'd like to see Nonito win this and sail off into the sunset, I think Inoue is just going to be too young, too quick, too powerful.
My mind agrees with you, but my heart doesn't. I'm going Donaire.
You going for the surprise?
I'm going for the surprise. Nonito the Flash Donaire. The Flash. The Filipino Flash, excuse me. The Filipino Flash. But I think that's an exciting fight. I'm kind of bummed out it's on a Thursday, you know, but, you know, whatever. It's going to be on DAZN, so at least it's going to be on demand. So that's kind of cool. And also, like we touched on earlier, your favorite of mine, KSI Logan Paul at the Staples Center this Saturday in Los Angeles on DAZN. BJ Saunders also on that card fighting for he's defending his WBA, or what title does he have?
There's nothing listed on BoxRec that he's defending anything.
Oh, so it's not a sanctioned world title
but
fight?
But obviously it is his WBA super middleweight, if it was going to be.
Yeah.
But BoxRec doesn't have it listed. Well, when I checked it, it wasn't listed.
So
anyway.
BJ Saunders is obviously on that card as well. Devin Haney is on that card. And also friend of the show, which a lot of people don't know, Ronnie Rios. Golden Boy's Ronnie Rios, who's coming off the most significant win of his career against Diego De La Hoya at the StubHub Center in Carson, California earlier this year. Ronnie Rios is also on that card. So that's cool. You know, that hasn't really been promoted, obviously, probably because it's not really a Golden Boy card. But, like, you know, I'm kind of glad to see Ronnie back in the fold right there.
He's got some interesting, you know, when he gets the win over Hugo Berrio, it'll be interesting to see because, you know, his division, he's got quite a few intriguing fights that hopefully we could get in Southern California.
No, I like it. Yeah, I hope it comes back. I hope it comes back. You know, I think Ronnie with that win really, you know, boosted up his confidence and everything. And hopefully Golden Boy sees that and hopefully he can keep it going, which we need to get him on. So, Ronnie, if you're listening, Lex, if you're out there, call us. We need you back on the show. And also, Jamel Herring, another friend of the show, defends his title, his WBO super featherweight title against Lamont Roach of Gold. This is a Golden Boy versus a top-ranked fighter. I think this is an intriguing fight, too. I think Roach has been working hard to try to get to this type of opportunity. And obviously, Herring, as he mentioned when we interviewed him at the Bank of California Stadium, he said that they didn't expect him to win. They wanted Ito to win. And look at what he's got the belt. He's the money man, you know, at least in this fight. I think this is an interesting fight. Who do you got?
I think Jamel Herring will win. I think he's similar to Josh Taylor, where they stick them in the big fights and he raises his level.
Right.
So I think that he's just one of those people that just shows up on the night. I think he'll win. I think Lamont Roach, I've seen him on quite a few of the Golden Boy cards, like Fantasy Springs, also in Vegas. He struggled against some of the fighters that really, I think they'd put him in there to blow them away. So I think Herring will get it.
That's an intriguing fight. I like it. And I'm sure Golden Boy would be ecstatic if Roach gets it. I'm sure they would.
Top-ranked card, and they steal the belt and take it home?
Yeah, you never know. You never know. I mean, you know, Ramirez took the belt from Maurice Hooker from Matchroom to DAZN. So, you know, you never know. But once again, guys, we appreciate you guys listening to episode 55 of The Last Round. We once again want to give our sincere thanks to Blair the Flair Cobbs. The styling and profiling, wheeling, dealing, kiss stealing Golden Boy fighter who just fought on the Canelo card this past Saturday, as we mentioned. You know, we our big thanks to him for coming on the show tonight. Like I said, we're excited to see where he goes, especially with the personality he has, incorporating a little bit of WWE personality into the boxing world. You know, it's always entertaining, so our big thanks to him. And Mike, tell everybody where they can follow us again.
Well, at The Last Round 12 on Twitter and Instagram, and be sure to tune in next week so you can get those big reviews of the Jamel Herrig, KSI, Logan Paul.
I'm ready. I am ready for that. I am ready for that. So once again, guys, I'm Danny Z. For my co-host, Michael Shepard, this is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is...